seem to know what to say. Haven't you noticed? Suddenly I'm bright and breathing because of all the beautiful and new things.
I've been up for the role of the king so many times and come so close.
Yeah. I'm surprised you didn't get it.
It's hard for me to listen to this music right now because I've just been disappointed so many
times.
Certainly
qualified.
But it's fun to listen to Sandy Duncan sing this music, and that's who you're hearing right now. She's doing The King and I at the Bushnell, and she's also joining us right now. Hi.
Hi, that was not me.
That was you. That was, they sent us an MP3.
No, it's not me.
Bobby. Well, Bobby said it was, anyway.
No, that was that lady from the movie, I think, or else it was Gertrude Lawrence. Mm. I don't sing it like that at all.
Okay, how about this? Does it sound like you?
Let me see. Where?
Can you hear it?
Yeah.
I think we've got you up.
Yeah. I don't go like this. Like this.
Anyway, we have a gigantic King and I file here at the radio station. What can I say?
Well, you must have everything there is to know about it and more.
Oh, no, I doubt that.
We got a cut from Tennessee Ernie Ford coming up next.
That's right.
That's a duet, probably.
What is it about this show that it always seems kind of timely? I mean, it survived for decades and decades and in different forms, and it gets released without music and Jodie Foster and Shower Young Fat or something. But it always seems kind of true.
Well, it's kind of true because it's kind of about male-female relationships and about culture clash in the world and all of the, and young love and the younger couple and children being influenced by someone teaching them. So there are themes that are universal and timeless. You're right. I mean, it just goes on and on. I saw a Rex Harrison movie of it.
Yeah.
In like from 1940 something.
46, I think. That's
Anna
and
the King.
Anna and the King of Siam, isn't that what it's called? It's called something like that.
Yep. Anna and the King of something. But you're right. It goes on and on and on, and we're having the same success today, I think, again, because of what's going on globally. I think it's very relevant, and it resonates with a lot of truth for people.
I was going to try to lead you into that, but you just jumped all by yourself, so that's so great. Because, in fact, I think another thing about the show is that it's kind of about unchecked masculinity or about what there is that can check unchecked masculinity.
Well, it's also about, the kind of the excitement of a man finally being able to stand toe-to-toe with a woman as opposed to needing to suppress or being able to suppress her, and the same being true of her, of standing toe-to-toe with a man who's completely his own person, and they have to come to some very unique compromises, as we all do if we have a successful relationship in our lives.
And it really, I mean, that's absolutely true, and it's also one of these things where often you wonder what things can you get past and what things can't you get past in a relationship.
Ignore and learn to live with.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been married for 26 years and we're still working on it.
Yeah.
You just work on that all the time. Because I guess somebody always feels like I'm going to win.
Yeah.
And you just don't.
But your husband doesn't come from a culture based on slavery, for example.
Well, the slavery and also just the fact of that sort of barbaric behavior of other people's lives not being worth as much as yours, and and we're seeing that certainly across the globe with our confrontation in Iraq. It's a different mindset, and a lot of it, that's what we have to, I think, also is important about this show. It points out that you can't just snap your fingers and change things, because people are taught to believe what they believe and they grew up with it, and we can't just suddenly have a mindset that's ours. You have to bring people along. It's about education, as always.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the woman who wrote this, Anna Leon Owens, as a matter of fact, in the 1860s, it was kind of a ballsy thing to do, to go halfway around the world with a son and stand up to a man that could have her beheaded if he wanted. She subsequently moved to Canada and became a very staunch suffragette. So she was somebody who was on a path way ahead of her time.
Well, I want to, in a minute or two, circle back to the politics of this and see if I can get you in even more trouble. But let's talk a little bit about the music first, because, in fact, this is stuff that has been tackled by Gertrude Lawrence and Deborah Carr and
Marnie Nixon.
Marnie Nixon for Deborah Carr, musically
speaking.
There you
go.
And
almost every other woman I can think of that ever, walked and chewed gum
right.
has approached this role. And And like ballet and opera, certainly our musical comedy field is starting, because they do so many revivals. Like I know, I noticed even in plays, like they're doing Cat on a Hot Tin Roof again on Broadway. It starts to be a collection of materials that you go to see someone interpret it, you know, in a new and different way, and you go to see the person doing it. So it's just part of our history, and it is starting to feel like musical comedy is like opera and ballet, that there are these certain classics that bear doing again and again by whoever is doing it at the time, as opposed to some shows that don't bear doing again and get lost.
I know I wrote one of those, actually. There's even been, of course,
I mean, even the Garden one. Excuse me, what?
There's even been sort of a highly operatic. I mean, at one point I had the, I think it was Kiri Tekunawa, did a version of this too. But I'm thinking, even based on what you said as we were just kind of coming in here, that your vocal approach to this material is I don't know, how would you describe it?
It's probably more lyric oriented, because I approached it as the director did, that it is it's a story and a musical that's been seen. If you don't capture the audience's attention and have them tune in to, because I think that's a more contemporary way to approach musical comedy anyway. I can't stand it when people stand on a stage and sing vowel tones at me. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But if you, in fact, interpret the sense and the wisdom of the lyric, then they get caught up by the story and what's going on, so that the person who is talking and doing the lines then seamlessly goes into the song, so that it seems an extension of dialogue, as opposed to, let's stop now and turn front and sing a little. To me, that's very jarring to a modern sensibility.
Actually, Richard Rodgers once said, don't sing my music, sing Oscar's words.
Well, there you go. I'd never read that quote, but that's exactly how I approach music.
I never read it either, but Max Showalter told me that.
Well, it's smart, because particularly with music that's been heard and heard and heard again, if you don't, then people just sort of sit there, it goes in one ear and out the other, and they're not engaged by what's going on story-wise.
Yeah. I think maybe the exception of in that show, and you don't have to worry about it anyway, is we Kiss in the Shadows, which you kind of have to sing that kind of. You can't sing that conversationally.
You have to sing them all. And, I mean, and the number also that the mezzo does of Something Wonderful, Oh, Man, Who Needs You, there's a certain sound that goes with it. On the other hand, there could be an intelligence behind the lyrics, so that you're not standing with your arms folded and singing tones. There's a responsibility to do the music and to certainly do all the notes and everything, but I think it has to do with interpretation and intelligence.
Now, yeah, one thing that I have noticed about you is that you haven't, speaking of ballsy, you haven't been afraid to speak your mind about a lot of stuff, and you did bring up Iraq about this, and I mean, I've been reading some other quotes, and I mean, it's great to see somebody who's willing to talk about this kind of stuff, maybe in the context of doing a Rodgers and Hammerstein show.
Well, there are stories. It's our folklore. It's how we tell stories. I mean, they happen to have been extremely intelligent and bright men who wrote shows. Like even in South Pacific, you know that one lyric, you've got to be taught to hate and fear.
Mm-hmm.
They, too, were very much ahead of their time, and that's why they endure, because they tell the truth. And I think any time you tell the truth, it's going to last.
Yeah. But I'm taking it, I'm concluding from some of the things that you said, that your fellow Texans, the Bushes, they probably don't come to see you perform?
Gee, I don't know. I met the mom and dad. I was at the White House several times when they were there.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not to this White House group. No.
Yeah. I mean, it is sort of also surprising these days. I mean, you're just kind of alluding to it, too, in terms of lyrics that are already embedded in things. But you go and see a show. I mean, even in Wicked, there's a line about regime change or something.
Oh, is there
like
really?
That.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. But I think more and more people feel a responsibility to speak out. And when you have access, you do. The trouble we get into, I think, in this country is I think everybody has the right to say what they believe, and absolutely that's what we're founded on and then we're told to do. On the other hand, I think there's a tendency by people in general to give a little more credence to what celebrities say, and you have to look to the source and you have to sort of weigh it, as opposed to just being swayed because they happen to be starring on a hit television series. I think it has to do with discretion of the listener more than anything.
Yeah. Although, I also think, I mean, and I think this was sort of borne out by Linda Ronstadt's experience, there's a certain segment of the population that, in particular, they don't do well with women who are in entertainment who want to speak their minds about something.
That seems to be true, but I really don't care.
Good for you.
I think that comes with age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's a great show, and we're thrilled to get you coming to Hartford.
What is your show? Do you have, like, a musical... What is the basis of your talk show? You seem very well informed.
Well, we're not, actually.
You're just faking it, are you? Like everybody else.
No, actually, we do... Our show is ordinarily kind of a political show. It's a sort of left-of-center political show on a commercial radio station, which you're not even supposed to be able to do that.
No, you're not. That's not allowed in the media.
Yeah,
right
but
now.
Our bosses don't even know we're here. They've never listened to the show. So,
well, continued success to you.
But when we had the chance to get you on, obviously it seemed like such a treat. And I am kind of a musical theater fan. And
well, it's obvious. Thank you for being so informed. Sometimes, you know, the questions are, where were you born and when did you start to dance? And I'm about tired of talking about that.
Yeah.
So thank you for your your being up on the subject.
Well, you're quite welcome. Look, if the guy who's playing the king gets sick, you know, I'm available. Call my agent, okay?
I'll keep it in mind.
Okay, bye.
Thanks.
Such a puzzlement. I should have auditioned a little bit more. I should have practiced a little bit. I should have worked up a number. If I'd known she was going to like me, I probably would have.
It is hard to believe, isn't it?
It doesn't happen
too often.
Yeah, I don't have any real contingency plan for somebody liking me.
Rare moment, but...
So how are you today?
I feel like great.
I haven't had a chance to talk to you.
I am lovely. Thank you for asking.
Racing around dealing with things.
Really?
Dealing with my mother, so my blood pressure...
I've been
dealing with my mother, too.
No. I've been dealing with the boys today.
Yeah.
We had another one of these 46-hour phone calls in the office.
This is the boys being the two producers. Bobby Sherwood produces our show, and Mikey C produces the Buddy Bicevich show, and they room together.
Right. We really should just start doing an update every day on them.
Yeah.
There was, I think at least a 50, 60-minute phone call in there.
Between the two of them?
Bobby.
Bobby?
Yeah, you know the usual. You know the things that drive you out of the office?
Yeah.
Well, we had one of those today. Right.
But the two boys getting along? Because
boys are getting along great.
Considering maybe some counseling or something.
And they're so domestic. Mikey C. Bragging today about how he did three loads. Get this now, folks. Three whole loads of laundry.
Three loads of laundry doesn't seem like a lot to me.
Three loads of laundry is nothing.
It's an appetizer. It's a warm-up. You're just going to get your laundry
child's
chops
play.
Oiled at that point.
Child's play. I used to do this when I used to have a house.
Yeah.
I used to do this to clean the house, clean like two and a half bathrooms. Vacuum and the laundry at the same time.
Yeah, I bet you're
nothing.
I bet you're a good folder too.
I'm a tremendous folder.
I think you probably are. I'm not that good a folder, although over time I've been forced to develop some folding skills.
Yeah, but I don't care what it is that you do. At least from my experience, house cleaning, anything like that, a woman can always do it better.
Except you know, I mean, there are some. You know, we're coming along. Guys are coming along.
I can't. You talk about fold. My wife can fold like
she can
crazy
fold
person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she's incredible.
Well, the two of you must been quite a team. Now.
Oh, we make a great team, yeah.
No, I can't fold that well. And actually, that's the part of it that I hate. You know, I like getting the laundry done.
Yeah, so just leave in the bathroom.
But then at that... No, I don't even want to take it out of the dryer. At that point, I want to go to the bullpen. I want to just put up my left hand and say, bring somebody in here. I've taken it here to the seventh inning.
Instead of the closer, it's the folder.
Somebody come in here and mop up.
Or the folder and then the closer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back.
Log on to WTIC.com and stay informed.
You know, it's interesting, you know, Richard Rodgers and then Bobby plays this particular song because it's been pointed out that, you know, the people who kind of created American popular music in the first 50 years of the 20th century were Irving Berlin and Richard Rodgers and Harold Arlen and George Gershwin. And for the most part, these were either Jewish immigrants or the sons of Jewish immigrants from, you know, sort of Eastern Europe-y kinds of places who then kind of came to America and discovered a little bit of the sound of the blues and black music and kind of put the two things together. But it's been a while, a lot of music. Like somebody once suggested that I Love Paris. Should be called I Love Moscow. I mean, it sounds something kind of dirge-like about it. You know, I love Moscow in the springtime. And I think, you know, they did sort of bring that sound with them a little bit. Anyway, so you're worried about these debates.
Yeah, I am.
How come?
Yeah. Because I don't think John Kerry can win. He could be the greatest debater on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
He could be fantastic. He could clearly win hands down, technically, but still lose.
Except that, you know, I mean, we saw that poll yesterday. I think it's Time Magazine. I can't remember who did the poll. Some institution found out that people actually do expect Bush to do better than Kerry. I mean, a higher percentage of people expect Bush to do better than Kerry. I don't think Bush benefits from quite the same set of expectations that existed in 2000 when everybody thought he was a gibbering moron.
Well, maybe that's the problem. My opinion hasn't changed
that since then. But I just think, you know, I mean, it certainly was the case that time that all he had to do was show up and,
right.
and you know, be able to keep saliva in his mouth.
There is a percentage of people in this country, I think this guy can do no wrong. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any difference what he does. He can do the stupidest thing going, and has. And yet, people just accept it and think, well, he's a great leader, and he's doing the right thing, and he's, you know, his heart's in it, and he just has it going on, you know?
Actually, I love the thing that Al Gore wrote, on the op-ed page of the New York Times today about the debates, basically warning John Kerry, be prepared for the toughest debates of your career. While George W. Bush's campaign has made lowering expectations into a high art form, the record is clear. He's a skilled debater who uses the format to his advantage. But I love the end of Gore's piece. I'm just going to take a minute and read it. The biggest single difference between the debates this year and 4 years ago is that President Bush cannot simply make promises. He has a record. And I hope that voters will recall the last time Mr. Bush stood on the stage for a presidential debate. If elected, he said, he would support allowing Americans to buy prescription drugs from Canada. He promised that his tax cuts would create millions of new jobs. He vowed to end partisan bickering in Washington. Above all, he pledged that if he put American troops into combat, quote, the force must be strong enough so that the mission can be accomplished and the exit strategy needs to be well defined. And then Gore says, comparing these grandiose promises to his failed record, it's enough to make anyone want to, well, sigh. Gore having famously gotten himself in a lot of trouble by sighing during the debates last time. First of all, I mean, that's a great point, and it just sort of sums it all up kind of perfectly. And not only that, but it's also a nice example of the slightly ironic, self-deprecating kind of postmodern personality Al Gore has developed for himself. There was a profile of him in the New Yorker a couple of weeks ago that kind of made this point that, you know, almost more than any failed political figure you can think of, he really has sort of learned to kind of, you know, take all the things that basically, you know, caused him to burst into flames 4 years ago and kind of make fun of them and make them part of his personality and kind of a sense of irony. I mean, to make a sighing joke about himself, I think, took a certain amount of self-perspective that a lot of people don't have.
Listen to these real stories of
me from Southington.
ID.
Hi.
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 Colin, I wanted to ask you, you're having trouble sleeping, I heard.
I'm having horrible sleep disorders. They come upon me from time to time, and they last for a month or two of just mayhem. And
I heard you quickly yesterday and didn't have time to call in, but I had a suggestion that maybe you could have your DNA recorded, and then you could listen to a recording of your own DNA, and maybe that would help you rest.
Either that or that would upset me even more once I knew what my DNA sounded like. But, yeah,
if you listen to your own heart sounds, it might help you to relax and fall asleep.
A little bit of biofeedback.
Yeah.
What she's referring to, actually, is a study that was done of yeast, and the actual DNA pattern of the yeast was transformed into a musical note sequence and then played back to the yeast, and the yeast seemed to like it and did more organized things with itself as a result.
Yeah.
And so why couldn't that work for you?
Well, my DNA, of course, is going to be a little bit more complicated than yeast. Not very much. So, you know, the yeast DNA may just go na 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 na. We're yeast.
Keeping you more awake.
Kind of over and over again. But my DNA pattern would come and go. You know, it would be like a Steve Reich thing. It might be kind of upsetting. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's worth a try. It's
all right.
Worth a try.
Thanks for caring that much even to call.
Okay,
right,
see ya. Bye-bye.
Well, if anybody would be willing to make some musical version of my DNA, yes, I would play it while I was trying to sleep. I may fall asleep right now, however. That's the problem. When you're not sleeping very well. And yeah. my problems, as I say, are with sleep maintenance as opposed to sleep initiation. I can fall asleep quite easily.
Yeah.
And then I wake up and then I can go back to sleep.
I fall asleep every night in my beautiful hotel bed.
Yeah. But I'm
my
delicate.
Own bed, I have no idea where it is.
Yeah. I see, I'm much more delicate than you are. You're
delicate?
Yeah, I'm very delicate. I'm very delicate. I'm a delicate flower. And as a result, I often have trouble sleeping. Mm-hmm. I'm having terrible problems sleeping. And then I read this article saying that drugs are bad and that cognitive therapy is what you need. But to me, that's like having to take a class on how to sleep, you know?
Yeah, that seems...
I mean, I resent... Even though I, in fact, don't know how to sleep, I resent the idea that I have to go to, like, summer school, you know, for sleeping.
Right.
I have to be a remedial sleeping guy. It bothers me. And I
fall asleep in class.
I tend to think who else would be in the class, and that's kind of disturbing, too.
If you got trouble,
I'm doing a serious subject.
How do you know I wouldn't know?
Isn't Mary Martin have some kind of weird sign off about if you ever need a friend or something like that? Something like that. She had some kind of thing that was like that. If you ever need a friend, you got a friend in me or something like that?
Maybe.
Yeah. You used to do this, before us, right?
Yeah.
Before we did the show.
But I did it before he did it.
And you did it before he did it, and then he did it, and then you did it, and then you and I did it, yeah.
And then we did it.
Yeah, but if we ever needed a friend, we could call Larry Martin.
Well, yeah.
But I don't know where he is.
He's not with us any longer.
Oh, really? Larry's gone to his reward?
I believe he has, yes.
Joined the Choir Invisible?
Yes, I believe he has. Thanks for bringing that up, by the way.
No, I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure that's the case.
Well, I hope you're not needlessly spreading alarm. What if... Well, I don't know. It's like a Mark Twain kind of thing.
Well,
you know?
I'm not. I don't know. I think that's the case. I will check on it.
All right, please do, because he. Well, anyway,
thanks for bringing it up.
All I wanted to bring up was that Larry used to say something about if you ever need a friend, and we don't ever see it at the end of his show. He used to say something like that. If you ever need a friend,
yeah, right.
I'll be your friend or something. I was something like that.
But naturally, as usual, you drag me into the middle of it.
Oh no, I was just asking. I was just pointing out that we don't do that to our listeners. We don't. We never offered to be. As a matter of fact,
We discourage such.
We would give you the names of other talk show hosts who would be more likely to be your friend.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
And that's, I think, available on the website right now. If you need a friend, we have several numbers you can call, but not ours.
Well, we certainly have some intriguing calls here.
Well, let's start with Tracy, because that one can only get me in trouble.
All right. Tracy, hi.
Hi, Tracy.
Hi. Hi, Bruce. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Great.
Fine.
I wanted to touch base with Colin on his sleep problem.
Yes.
Colin, are you waking up and having your to-do list run and run and run inside your head?
No, what happens is I wake up and I realize that I'm awake, and I realize that I'm not supposed to be awake, and that if I stay awake, I'm going to be in a lot of trouble because I won't have gotten enough sleep, and then that becomes the to-do list. The to-do list is get back to sleep. But the more anxious you are about getting back to sleep, the less likely you are to get back to sleep.
This is true.
Yeah.
Now, go to the health food store. I know you go to Wild Oats.
Mm-hmm.
Pick up a bottle of one of the Bach flower remedies.
Bach flower remedies.
Bach, B-A-C-H.
Yeah, like the composer.
Right, and you want the one that's called White Chestnut. And you're going to put a couple of drops of that in a little bit of water.
Yeah.
Keep it by your bedside.
I'm not sure you understand what my problem actually is. But no, go ahead.
And when you
I don't have white chestnuts, actually.
When you wake up, start drinking that.
Start drinking white chestnuts?
Yes.
Okay. How many drops?
Just a couple of drops in a glass of water by your bedside.
Yeah.
You will be amazed at the results. My husband started using it 5 years ago. Yeah. He's got a to-do list that you wouldn't believe, and
your husband,
he goes
Larry
right
Martin,
back to sleep.
this is how you got rid of your husband, right?
No.
Your to-do list. Make husband drink white chestnuts.
Diet.
All right. Okay. White chestnut. I'll try anything at this point.
Good.
It doesn't sound like a real FDA-approved thing. This sounds like something that, you know.
No, it's a homeopathic remedy.
Yeah.
You can take it no matter what other medications you're taking.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Okay.
For kids, for animals, for anything.
Right.
I mean, they're very safe.
For animals?
Maybe I'll try it on some kids and animals first. Yeah, they do. I'll have Joey and Malcolm take it. And if they live through the night, then I'll take it.
Good luck.
Yeah, I just, you know, Bruce is going to be at the memorial service going, well, maybe it was the white chestnut. I don't know. He had a lot of problems, really.
You got a friend in me. What can
thank
I say?
Thank you, Tracy. I can tell.
You're welcome. All right.
Yeah,
bye.
You look like you just want to go home.
I think this is going very well. So let's just make this sing.
Right.
Here's Jim in a car. Jim.
Yeah.
Hey there, how's it going?
Fine.
Great.
So you haven't been diagnosed as having sleep apnea, have you, Colin?
No, I don't think I have sleep apnea.
Because you might need one of those machines. I have one.
You have a machine?
I have, it's called a CPAP, C-P-A-P machine.
Yeah.
And it just kind of keeps, you know, keeps your throat open by forcing air in there.
I have a machine to help me poop, but that's where I draw the line.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm glad to hear that.
So your Laxolator 2000, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you have a call coming in.
My gastroenterologist is calling right now.
Hold on.
We actually have a phone ringing here.
Manufactured by Haley's MO. Ruth, I'm calling to ask you if you've touched it all today on the death of Scott Muni.
Did Scott Muni die, really?
Yes, he did.
Oh.
Yep.
Yeah, Scott Muni, he was like a New York radio legend. Did you ever work with Scott Muni? You worked everywhere.
No, I
did. Everybody?
No.
But, but he had some New England contact, too, because he had that syndicated show that it, aired on a few stations in the New England area.
Yeah.
And I just thought maybe it might be worth just touching up very briefly. But
What was that called?
Ticket to Ride. It was a show featuring, about the Beatles and all the hidden aspects, little trivia things about the Beatles every week and, how all kinds of things.
You can hear Ringo coughing right here and help.
Yeah, okay. No, I actually remember the show, and I know what you're talking about now.
That was pretty good. That was a good imitation.
I think on this track we can hear George Harrison scratching himself.
All right, well, listen, thanks, and I didn't know Scott Muni had died, but...
I did. I saw that a few minutes ago.
It comes to us all sooner or later, so... Anyway, thanks for calling.
Well...
This isn't really how I plan to spend this particular segment of the show.
Tim in Manchester. Tim?
Hey, guys, I'm very concerned about your two producers fighting and everything. Now, are they both signed up for this WTIC dating service thing?
Well, we discussed that with them, too. I mean, particularly because one of them seems to have a certain amount of libidinal energy that's building up inside him.
Oh.
We thought maybe that
was... Thanks for bringing this up again, Sam.
That
appreciate
would be
it.
Maybe if you were to go onto that website there and see if you could find some nice woman. Keep him busy.
Exactly. Oh, boy. Well, I did call to talk about these. Well, first off, are you guys going to have any type of debates on your station with a congressional candidate?
We're going to debate one another. Actually, we're in the process of discussing that. I can't really release any information about that, but we actually are talking about whether or not to have some congressional debates, but we haven't finalized anything yet.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm certainly not going to call to complain about Nader not being involved. I suggest...
Actually, Nader can participate in any congressional debates that are held on our station.
About the presidential debate.
Yeah.
I just think that they should try to work in some product placement.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that, these are no longer the innocent debates that are sponsored by the League of Women Voters. They're sponsored by large corporations. So why not work in, some reference to some tanks, some military contractors, and people who have more of an invested interest than the average person.
Well, that would be what President Bush would want to work in. What would John Kerry want to be talking about, though?
Oh, well, he's heavily involved with the financial industry up in Boston.
And there's Heinz ketchup.
There's always ketchup, yeah.
Anything like that he would be able to work in. I mean...
I do agree. Things were better when the League of Women Voters... it seemed like it was a better world. And you know what? People felt guilty about giving a lot of crap to the League of Women Voters, whereas jerking this nonpartisan presidential debate commission around seems to be something people do at will. We have to go. Or maybe we don't. I don't know. I had the idea we'd be doing some traffic here.
I thought you'd be right about that.
I thought I'd be hearing the traffic sounder.
And in the background of Tomorrow Never Knows, you can hear George Martin opening up a jar of peanut butter.
I'm kind of Scott Muni mode now. Scared of going to the dentist? No need to be ever again. There's a different kind of dentist for you. Dr. Jerry Rosenfeld in Avon. How is he different? Call their office to make an appointment with Dr. Jerry, and you'll see for yourself. Different because he has the latest technology and still pays attention to the simple basics, like your personal choice of music on headphones to assure your comfort.
Coach Joe Gibbs has announced that he will try to help his woeful, terrible Washington Redskins by simplifying the offense. Take the ball and try to move it as far as you can over there. It's time for Sports at Quad, a very French sports discussion. Avec Monsieur Ambrose.
Oui.
And myself,
he had a pretty simple game plan against the Giants. Just give it to the Giants.
Good. Let's get it. Let's do it.
I'll ask Mr. Ambrosio. This one comes from Phil Herbert.
No relation to Don Herbert, but
no.
Wizard.
In Lancaster, Pennsylvania. You're right, dear Mr. Ambrosio, I have twice driven through the end of a rainbow where it meets the ground, although I'm told this is impossible.
No.
I was surrounded by the rainbow's colors, and there were many other drivers to witness that it can happen.
Right.
Can anyone explain this?
Yeah, it all depends. Again, you know, many of these questions have geographical explanations. How come this mic sounds so bad, by the way? Doesn't it?
Sounds
pretty awful. It doesn't sound as good as yours, guys.
Seems to sound different.
It's in our contract that we have the good money.
Well, I can understand that. I
can try that one.
Trust me, this answer's not going to be that good. It all depends as to the parts of the country where you're at. It only happens in the USA, and it only happens if you're driving from east to west. If you're driving across Missouri, Iowa, Idaho, or South Dakota, then you can come to the end of the rainbow. And the spectrum of colors at the end of the rainbow is spectacular, particularly in South Dakota and Idaho.
Are there more colors there that we don't even see ordinarily?
67 different colors have been found in a rainbow in South Dakota, 63 in Idaho.
Wow.
And that's going from east to west. In other words, if you're going from, say, west towards Pierre, you're likely to find more. If you're going to Pocatello in Idaho, you'll find more there. Doesn't happen ever on the East Coast or in the South. I'm telling you, this sounds awful. If it's like this, I'm not coming in tomorrow. Oh, I'm not coming in tomorrow anyway.
None of us are coming in tomorrow.
Exactly. We'll see you out at the rent.
We'll be in a rainbow, all right.
Exactly.
Judas, from his own personal planet, the most frightening talk show caller in America. What do you want?
I don't have that much power yet, Colin.
All right.
Anyway, Colin, let me ask you a question here.
All right.
By the way, are you watching the reruns of The Sopranos on HBO, too?
Actually, I did watch a little bit of the one last night because it was sort of touched upon my own situation. I felt a lot of kinship with Tony as a member of the sandwich generation. Anyway, what's your question? What's your comment?
You know, Colin, you ought to do like on-air psychiatry, like on-air psychiatric therapy. That'd be cool.
Well, I sort of feel like I'm doing it right now, oddly enough.
Okay, anyway, Colin, what's this thing I heard that Kevin Sullivan was talking about on Facebook State where he was talking about something about jobs being lost in higher education?
Wait a minute, you were listening to Face the State, like on our station, Face the State?
Yeah,
what are you, like, hanging upside down in a cave somewhere?
Something about the state shitting jobs.
That's a show on Channel 3. But what is it? That's the name of Face Connecticut. Face Connecticut is what our show is called.
Channel 3.
Oh, this is on Channel 3, okay. Even better.
Monday.
Who was hosting? Was it Al or was it Dennis?
It was Dennis.
How did Dennis look? How does Dennis look these days? I haven't seen Dennis in ages. How does he look?
He looks okay.
Do you find him an attractive man?
Just a newsreader.
He's married to an elf, you know.
You know.
All right.
Anyway, but what's this? How can the state of Connecticut be possibly losing jobs in higher education? Why did somebody even make that statement?
I don't know. I didn't make
it's
that
ridiculous
statement.
It's ridiculous on the face of it. I mean,
you're apoplectic. You're at a loss for words.
Brainwashed. People who should be applying for jobs at Walmart are going and running off to college like they're pretending to be college-grade material or something here.
Yeah.
You know?
So you're saying that people...
losing jobs in higher education. The theory doesn't even make sense.
Well, I don't even know what Kevin was saying. Maybe he was saying that because of budget cuts, we were losing jobs in higher education.
You mean state-funded?
State-funded education. But I don't know about, like, Wesleyan and Yale and things like Trinity. I teach at Trinity. I'm not losing my job, am I?
You teach a course?
I teach a course at Trinity, yeah. I'm Professor McEnroe. You might treat me with a little bit more respect from now on. As a matter of fact, I'd appreciate it if you'd address me as Professor, at least for the coming week or so.
All right, Professor.
All right.
Okay, professor.
No, not in that tone of voice.
Okay.
Not in that tone
of voice. They call Scott Muni.
Not in that tone of voice. Not like, all right, Professor. Not like that, like what you just said. I didn't like that.
You know. Well, who do you think you are, Elvis?
Well, no, I'm Professor McEnroe. All right. Well, just go off and do whatever it is that you do in the privacy of your...
You need that on-air.
You seem like you're at a loss for words today. You're not usually like
this. Find your own Dr. Melfi and get that on-air therapy going.
Believe me, I've just been doing it for the last 3.5 minutes. Anyway, thanks for calling. And tomorrow we're going to be at beautiful Rensselaer Field, but Tony Blankley is going to be joining us. Conservative Newt Gingrich kind of guy, Tony Blankley.
Yep.
And Phil Austin, the fighting president of UConn.
Yep.
The two-fisted university president who doesn't play by the rules, Phil Austin. And Daniel Ellsberg is going to be joining us, too. Daniel Ellsberg, to get ready for the debates. Thanks to our producer, Mr. Bobby Sherwood.